apocalypse.
I gotta get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle.
I know what some of your big city no bra wearing hairy legged women livers might say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Maximum Film. It's episode 249, and we're aging like wine. All right, y'all, it's your host, Sippy Whitey Way, and in the booth with me are my friends. So let me introduce you to them. First up and foremost, it's Christmas Daddy himself, the world's favorite critic, Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, Iffy, the obvious answer would be to say Max FunCon was amazing because it happened last weekend. And it was. But, you know, I figured every show is telling you that. So, you know, if you were there, you know. If you weren't there, you know. Everybody knows. What I am going to pick for my what's good this week is Ms. Marvel, which is premiering this week on Disney Plus. If you are a little fried out on the Marvel Cinematic Universe, this might be the thing to, if not win you back entirely to the fold, at least to this show. It is about a working class Pakistani American teenager who develops superpowers in Jersey City, you know, that old Saw. But it's just done with a real vibrancy, and it's funny, and it's colorful and musical, and is a great sort of like annoying teen but you also love her kind of show that also has superpowers involved. So I don't know how they're going to fit her into the MCU at large. I'm sure that's somebody's job to worry about, but just on her own turf, I'm really delighted by Ms. Marvel, and people should check it out.
Yes, indeedy. I haven't checked it out yet, but I've been super excited to peep it. Someone who is in a constant state of super excitement is none other than the Queen of the Midwest herself, Drea Clark. What's good?
A constant state of excitement. Yes, that's me. What's good with me is a very insular but very satisfying, which is I went through my closet and I did sewing repairs on a bunch of garments, as they say. I fixed buttonholes, like there were jagged edges on things, there were some holes in things, and it felt very satisfying to do. I listened to a podcast, I did all of my darning. I think it's called darning.
Did you have notions?
If Little Women taught me anything, yes, I went through my notions. But it was, a lot of them were honestly things that that I might have thrown out in the past of like, ugh. But now they're like house dresses with my janky ass stitches in them. And it was very satisfying. And I felt very smug. And as you guys know, second to excitement, smugness is my favorite emotion.
It is so satisfying.
It really is, smugness.
All right. Well, you know, we oftentimes have just amazing, phenomenal, spectacular guests. And look, today is no different. Give it up for Parvesh Chhina, actor of film and television, voice and live action. You might recognize him from stuff like Centaur World, Mythic Quest, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, or Outsourced. What's good?
Yay!
Hi everyone. I hope my sound is good, because now after that like introduction, I'm like, oh God, his sound better be good. And I even did like a microphone change. Did a microphone change. How's this? Test 1, 2, 3. It's Parvesh. Hi.
You sound great.
I still record all my auditions on my iPhone upside down in a closet, even though I have like that sound box. I'm staring at one right now. But I've decided that maybe if we have these tools, we should be professionals.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Indeed.
That's my takeaway. You're not wrong. I can't wait to see Ms. Marvel, Alonzo. I've got some friends in it, like Sagar Sheikh, who's like the big beardy guy, and yes, Trevina Springer. I just can't wait because like, Ms. Marvel, like, because I missed the boat on Ms. Marvel. I kind of stopped reading comics after a while because it got cyclical. You know, when your first comic, when you're 8, is Secret Wars, and then when you're 38, it's Secret Wars all over again. You're like, aha! Now I've seen
another crisis?
It all.
Great.
Come on, seriously. But Ms. Marvel, like, is huge among the Browns. You know, like, I missed this representation boat, and then I kind of, like, I played the Play Avengers, you know, the PlayStation game. Before I read the comics, I'm like, oh yeah, this is the universal representation of everything, right? Even as we get to the movie, like everyone can be a superhero or a gay horny guy wanting to get laid. Like it doesn't matter what race, religion.
Those are the two things, though. Yeah. You could be a superhero or a gay horny guy wanting to eat.
Yeah, that's,
a, that's what you aspire choices. To in this
Those
life.
Are universal, yeah. Let's be honest.
Yes. A truth universally acknowledged. Hey, Iffy, what's good with you?
Oh, with me, look, I'm going to be the lazy one and say Max FunCon, it was a good time to sit around and see y'all face to face after years, literal years, being in the same place with you, you know, sleeping under the same roof. That was a first in general, you know, so yeah.
Oh, yeah, we were roommates.
We had our own cabin.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're bunk mates. That was a blast, and I truly, truly treasured.
He treasured it. He treasured it so bad.
I treasured it like Chester Cheetah. But you know, speaking of friends coming together in a faraway place to have fun, we're talking about Fire Island today. And later we'll nominate our favorite modern adaptation movies to the Hall of Excellence. But first, it's time for Itadic, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? It's the movie news segment where we read and discuss amongst ourselves whether some movie news is important and if we care. First up, Trey is going to kick us off.
Yeah, speaking of movies, Neve Campbell will not return for Scream 6, citing pay issues.
Boo.
The star of the Scream franchise announced this week that she would not be returning for the next planned installment. Campbell, who has played Final Girl Sydney Prescott since the first movie came out in 1996, said in a statement that she, quote, felt the offer that was presented to her did not equate to the value she has brought to the franchise. Is this woman knowing her own worth important, and do you care?
This is shocking. This is like trying to make a Nightmare on Elm Street movie without Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger.
Right.
Like, you know, she the killer keeps changing in this movie, but the constant is Sydney. And so, you know, you need a constant in a franchise like this. And I it's just ridiculous to me that Paramount can't cough up some Sonic money to make sure that, you know, she gets taken care of the way that she should.
That last one, which did not get the best of reviews, made like $144 million, didn't it?
Yeah, like, and with Omicron still raging, and like it wound up going to Paramount Plus fairly swiftly, so that it was still able to get people into theaters into January, where we were all, you know, a lot of us were still terrified. That's impressive.
I think it's a baller move on her part too to go, even if public, if you know, because like there's this thing of, you know, like how can you not think of like pay equality and equity among, you know, I always joke like, oh, of course I get paid a fifth than my co-stars because I'm brown. I mean, like, it was just like this thing you just kind of accepted, you know, but now I think partly because of like ScarJo and Emily Blunt. And, you know, dare I say, when the white actresses, when the white women make the stand, you know, then others can follow suit, you know, because they're the first kind of like, you know,
you're welcome.
I mean, it's in the sense like the first person to, you know, why Republicans are scared of suburbs. We know that's a comment to white women. It's a white women thing. So like even this, Neve Campbell, the voice, the face of Scream since we were in high school, because, you know, for me, Scream is junior year of high school. Like, good for her. Make that stand now, because haven't you all been like feeling this too in this days of streaming? Like, remember when they used to spend money on, I don't know, DVD boxes and shipping those DVDs? Somewhat, they're saving that money, and it just keeps going back to them and the shareholders or whatever. But like, it's not going to Neve, because Neve, if it was a difference between 100,000 or something, I don't think she would have gone public. But when we know that they have 500 million.
Oh, yeah, she went scorched earth. She didn't just, because normally, they would have like they would have somebody just leak like, oh, negotiations are having a bump because Neve. And this is just, she's like, no, they wouldn't give me my rate and I'm out.
Yeah.
And this is a fanboy franchise. So the people, comparable to the Futurama people who got mad about them trying to switch benders, I think are not going to have it with this.
Yeah, no, there's going to be a new contract by the end of the week.
Yeah.
The Scream heads are about to go buck wild. I've already seen the rumblings. It's ready.
He has his finger on the Scream head pulse.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of Pulse, a movie star chimp was found alive after an owner fakes his death.
Please unpack this.
Back in 1997, a chimpanzee named Tonka starred in both Buddy and George of the Jungle. Then, in May of last year, word went out Tonka had died. However, thanks in part to his Buddy co-star Alan Cumming, authorities have now confirmed that Tonka is alive and well. Owner Tanya Haddix faked the chimp's death so that she wouldn't be forced to give him to an ape sanctuary. Is this important? Do you care?
There's so much more here. Obviously, headline of the year.
Yeah.
Try and beat that headline. It's got everything from Alan Cumming to fake death of a chimpanzee.
I need to know how Alan Cumming is involved in this and if he wanted to be involved.
He was a co-star.
He worked with Tonka.
Sure,
and
no, that part I got.
I think PETA, PETA brought him in to try and like bring attention to it. And then he ended up like offering up $10,000 of his own as a reward for finding the... Yeah, wow. It was a whole thing. The other, of course...
How is Dunstan, do we know?
Oh.
Yeah, right? This is even more nuts, though, than it sounds. There's all this stuff. This woman had, like, six chimpanzees, and they're, like, living in her home, like a movie. And I feel like there was a reality crew involved in this. Like,
also, I just hope at some point, you know, they're in a convertible, and we had Tanya and Tonka... sitting in a Thelma Louise-esque in front of a canyon.
Grasping hands.
Yeah. But then she stops at a second later and she's like, okay, we're going to push the car over and tell people that.
That's so true. You really do want the faking of a death to be more than someone just saying that someone died. You want like a full,
full paper trail.
Car over a cliff.
See, I'm afraid I'm getting soft in my age, too. I went mainly... I can't even say vegan. I can't, because I'm from Chicago, so I'm going to have deep dish, like, cheese pizza while I'm here visiting. But I am mainly plant-based now. And so I'm getting to this weird place where I'm like, oh, God, ready? It's so, like, it's the liberal progressive that everyone makes fun of. But I'm like, should we be riding horses for fun and sport anymore? Because I don't think I'd like it if someone wanted to ride me. So I'm getting to the point where I'm like, do we really need to use animals? We've all been around it when it's like that old guy from Van Nuys, like, hitting that bear or that elephant.
Yes.
And I'm like, I don't know. If Jon Favreau could do Lion King with it, like, can we leave him alone? Let them be out in the wild. Let them be in zoos. I hated Tiger King at the end of the day of all, like, the back and forth and the ridiculousness of it all, because at the end of the day, animals died. And that's where I just sit. I'm like, if that's honestly my takeaway, is like, do we need to use animals? Can't we just... I would love to work across the CGI animal now and just call it a day and not be mauled by that.
I think that is a fair postscript to this absolutely absurd tale.
Between the mocap dog in Call of the Wild and the completely fake elephants and deer and whatever else that are in RRR, yeah, I think we're getting to that place where we can just fake the whole thing.
Yeah.
Speaking of the animals that we love in the big screen, Paddington Bear joined the Queen for tea at her Jubilee. You may have heard the Queen Elizabeth II celebrated her Platinum Jubilee last week, honoring her 70th year of queendom. Well, she had a little help in that celebration from immigrant to the UK, Paddington Bear. A video played to the audience before the Platinum Party at the Palace featured Paddington joining the Queen for some tea and, of course, marmalade sandwiches.
Perhaps you would like a marmalade sandwich. I always keep one for emergencies.
So do I. I keep mine in here.
Oh.
For later.
Yeah.
Is this important? Do you care?
I just hope that Ben Whishaw got paid a lot of money for that appearance. And also, you guys, maybe I'll start this off, but like, can we say fuck? Fuck the Queen. Fuck the House of Windsor. Fuck the people who watch The Crown on Netflix, too. Because like, as a brown Indian American, where two of my countries have been colonized by these fucking colonizers, I could care less. It's ridiculous. I thought we went over this when Helen Mirren played the queen and Michael Sheen played Tony Blair. And like Blair. The wife, Helena Bonham Carter, like, really, we have to go to this still? And she's like, but it's the queen, darling. It's the queen. Who cares?
I kept thinking, because so they have, obviously, Ben Whishaw voices Paddington in this. But Simon Farnaby, who writes the Paddington books, plays this, like, servant, butler, I don't know. And I had such, I was like, it is wild to me these guys wanted to be in this. But it also made me remember, do you remember when she did that sketch with Daniel Craig during the London Olympics? And it was like her and Bond, like, on a mission, and the corgis were... And it was the same thing. I had this, like, it is unfathomable that these... This talent is like, yeah, I'll do a bit with the queen.
Look, you know, Nixon went on Latin, Korea. Everything, anything is possible. And par for what it's worth, my parents were both born in Spain. So ask anyone in my family what they feel about Gibraltar, and they'll give you an earful about the Brits.
Sure, of course. It's just, and it's just so fascinating. Like, who cares? They, I literally, the image was done when Diana died. In 97, because that is my freshman year of, again, 96, 97, freshman year of college. So, like, that's a big deal when Princess Di dies and Madonna can't do Drowned World, that music video. And she does, like, Ray of Light or something, because it's basically that same thing, paparazzi being stalked. It's enough. I couldn't believe it. Like, after she died, like, we still kept up with these
people. And like, let's not forget the Meghan Markle, The Firm interview. Like, it's just, It just gets creepier and creepier. I do not understand the, especially Americans who just dote on, like, people who read, what is it, Victoria Magazine or whatever, who just dote on all that stuff and love, and will wake up at 4 a.m. to watch a royal wedding on cable. I've never gotten it.
Princess culture. Yeah. Princess culture.
I'm only the only princess I'm into has to be played by Vanessa Hudgens. That's fair. It. And that can be multiple princesses. And
there better be three of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Pass.
I'm also riding this train of, like, is the queen still alive? You know, at that festival, they had a hologram of her in her carriage. And I'm like, and I remember, like, that one random, like, Hollywood page that reported that she was dead and the house confirmed. I was like, but no pics, not enough pics for me to not believe it. And so I am of the, I need to see her walking and waving.
So you clearly didn't watch The Trooping of the Colors.
No. Can she be with Tonka the monkey, just to confirm that they're both?
Yeah. She's hanging with Tonka now.
And they're touring with Tupac and Michael Jackson on the hologram tour. Holograms 2023. Move over, ABBA. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be the new Coachella. It's just going to only be holograms. Oh, yeah. Well, we'll take a quick break, but when we come back, get in, losers. We're going to Fire Island.
Soylent, the original food tech company, makes delicious and nutritious nutrition products in convenient formats.
Small in size, big on nutrition, Soylent Squared is a delicious and balanced 100-calorie complete nutrition bar that can be taken on the go, eaten as a snack between meals, or enjoyed as a sweet, nutritious mini treat. I will say they are super handy if you want to, you know, head out of the house for a bit and shove one or two in your pocket and know that wherever you go, you've got a little something to nibble on that's actually good for you, and that, you know, you don't have to feel like you're going to regret it the next day because it's packed full of, like, you know, high fructose corn syrup or whatever. It's actually a healthy choice, and it's a satisfying snack, so it's a win-win.
Ooh, so if that made your mouth water, go to Soylent.com/MaxFilm and use promo code MaxFilm to get 20% off your first order. That's Soylent.com/MaxFilm and promo code MaxFilm for 20% off your first order, so you can be on your way to munching on some Soylent and one step closer to getting that Joel Kim booster bod.
So you've probably heard about microdosing. If you search around a bit on the internet, you'll find all sorts of people are microdosing to feel healthier and perform better.
Yeah, in fact, our show today is sponsored by Microdose Gummies. Microdose Gummies deliver entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. So look, if you're just trying to chill and you're not trying to spin out at a party so that you don't know what's going on in that dark room and you're just trying to just have a chill vibe, I think a microdose gummy is what you're looking for. I like doing it whenever I like to kick it at the house, maybe watch some Hunter, and kick my legs up knowing that I'm just going to feel good.
Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, just do a quick search online or go to microdose.com and use code MAXFILM to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show description, but again, that's microdose.com and code MAXFILM.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm Yosef Uwadiwe. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Parvesh China,
Alonzo Duralde.
And we've been hitting the theaters lately, but today we've got a much anticipated movie for you that just hit Hulu last weekend. Directed by Andrew Ahn, written by and starring Joel Kim Booster alongside Bowen Yang, Margaret Cho, and Conrad Rikamora. It's Fire Island. Drea, why don't you go ahead and summarize Fire Island for us?
All right, so very famously, Fire Island is a modernization of Pride and Prejudice. So if you're familiar with the structure of that, then you know what's coming. Joel Kim Booster plays Noah, who's the Elizabeth Bennet of sorts, and he goes with his sisters to Fire Island for an amazing gay getaway with nothing in sight but sun, sand, and Speedos. And while there, they bump into the sort of classism and hierarchy that's present both in the culture and specifically in this place. But also, you know, romances, flirtations ensue. He has butted up against a very fine, upstanding, super hot. We could talk about him more later, though. Conrad Rikamora. Uh-huh. And then his best friend, played by Bowen Yang, who is the Jane of the bunch, has a very adorable flirtation in Innocentville. It's great. Margaret Cho plays their sort of house mother. And fun, sexy, Pride and Prejudice-y, all over the place. Fire Island.
Yay.
Nice dismount.
That's great.
I just want to kick this off with a tweet I did while watching the movie and a reply. The tweet that I sent out was, the largest suspension of disbelief in my movie watching experience is anyone thinking Joel Kim Booster is not hot. And then I was quickly corrected us, and they said, I mean, I think it's obvious that he's hot, but if you saw gay dating apps, you too would know how easily he could get rejected. And this was tweeted to me by Fun Bottom. Shout out to Fun Bottom for setting the record straight for me. 10 out of 10 screen name for that specific reply.
I tend to like to fact check everything by Fun Bottom.
Yeah.
Or like any Fun Bottom in my life. Yeah.
I love the embracing of bottom culture today. Like, it's just night. Everyone knows. Everyone's welcome. When Margaret Cho yells out, where are my bottom? Are my bottom girls here? Like, I'm like, aw, we made it.
I think to that end, though, if he, like, one of the things that's set up right away, and like I said, the classism and this sort of hierarchical structure and, you know, who's considered hot or appealing.
And good old racism, let's not forget.
And good old racism. Thank you, Alonso. Thank you, yeah. It's very Jane Austen. And so it makes it such an easy segue for this. Like, there's a lot of films that try and adapt, even just Austen in general, definitely Pride and Prejudice, and they're not always successful because they don't always get how much you need that whole structure to hold together the humor, to hold together the observations. And it's Joel Kim Booster, because he also wrote this, sets it up so well. There's just this phrase at the very beginning when they're like boarding the boat or the ferry to get over to Fire Island, where he brings to mind this refrain of no femmes, no fats, no Asians,
right,
which is describing basically he and his friend group. Mm-hmm. And if you were not already privy to that, like, it's just right there. It's laid out from the very beginning, and I thought it was set up so well and really took advantage of what you're digging into with Pride and Prejudice as your backbone.
The fact that Andrew Ahn came in to direct, and we talked about Driveways on the show, we're big fans of his work, but he has up to this point been a fairly dramatic filmmaker, or even like a film like Driveways, which, you know, has humor in it, but a lot of sweetness, and it's very sort of subtle and low key. And this is a broad and brash comedy, but at the same time, it does have that attention to, this is a story about like people and their, you know, their own egos and their, you know, their loves and their disappointments and that kind of thing. And I think it's a good balance between the kind of bawdiness that Booster writes. You know, you have like physical gags about fellatio, you know, and zippy one-liners about prep pills.
Yeah,
but I think Andrew Ahn keeps it really grounded, so it comes out where it is almost sort of Austin-esque in terms of, obviously, she's much more prim about this stuff, but it is this kind of observational comedy of manners about contemporary gay life in certain respects.
Yeah, there's less drugs in the Austin as well.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little.
It was so wonderfully, you know, the Pride and Prejudice template is lovely. I like the Lizzie Bennet Diaries. Like, I had friends in that one online, and it's just so, I mean, it is precious. It is a very good standard that is just accepting and welcoming. And I know that, I don't know if we're going to talk about the, you know, how someone tweeted, I forget who she was, but was complaining, maybe a writer for the New Yorker or New York Mag, about,
oh yeah,
about, this doesn't pass the Bechdel test.
Oh,
and I'm like,
she apologized.
All right, yeah. Fun Home, I saw that at the public theater, okay? So let the Gaysians talk about gay Asian dick for a minute. Margaret Cho had no problem. She knew her role in this film. Thank you. Yes, I am the great aunt, the Mossy, if I use my people's word for aunt, to this group. And it was just lovely. And I just could not believe, like, motherfuck, we can't have anything without someone coming and being like, you know, this movie where you guys finally had, I don't know what majority of you guys from that big continent are from, you guys didn't talk about women enough. Fuck you.
She took it back. She made a genuine apology. So I'll give her that much.
Great. Thank you. Because that's who you need to come after. The intersectional Gaysians. You know, because that's the one.
Finally,
Conrad
Riccamora.
Yeah. I mean, like, he's a Broadway actor doing soft power and everything. I mean, like, this is just so ridiculous that that's
so
nitty gritty. Let us have fun as an Asian person, actor, gay, who has played parts that are gay, who have played parts that are fools. I am not hot. I am not quintessential white America media landscape hot, which they do talk about in this film, because I looked at everyone. I'm like, well, fuck, they look hot to me. Even Bo and Yang, like, oh my gosh, I'm not the pretty one. I'm like, you don't have moobs. You're fine, Bo, and you look great. And then, like, really, when he was, like, lying down, I'm like, everyone is fit in Hollywood, you know? And but it's just, like, here's the thing that I've noticed in my career. I play fools. I play low status. I play weak. And those people exist, and they need to be represented, too. But you know what? You're not. You're not the representation of an entire race, you know, from another country when you're born in this country and you realize, like, fuck, I'm 5'5". I better come up with some jokes or I'm not going to make it out of Gregory Middle School alive, you know? And so it's just so, let the gay Asians just be fucking gay and do drugs and make these jokes and get their dick sucked and go on OnlyFans and get movies made, because white people get to do it. Black people get to do it. Latino people get to do it. I didn't notice a lot of, like, you know, South Asians, but, you know, we'll go there. And that's the sequel, Fire Island 2.
We're visiting
Palm Springs. Please come to Palm Springs. I've never been to Fire Island, so I'm like, what is this place?
Also, yeah, it's so funny because it hit me right as we were watching. I was like, oh yeah, this is a real place. I have friends who have been there. I've my whole life I've been gay adjacent, you know, always around. I got a lot of, but also it's like
Fagstag, it's called.
Yeah.
Like, I don't call it that.
Yeah, don't.
Because like, also like, I remember when Joel came to LA because I was on a show with him, and I was, and it was so funny because the one thing I was thinking about it was like, oh man, he was so funny. I forgot to bully him for being hot, because everyone who's hot and does comedy, you got to bully them to be like, well, why are you doing this? But what I really, there is something I've been getting from a lot of the movies we've been tapping in on, which is like, I get this joy, even if it's like, you know, not my corner of diversity, but to see people get to make films about their specific truth and have fun in it. Mm. Like, that brings me like this, like, I can't, it's this euphoria I get where it's like, oh man, they're getting to tell their story how they want it in the way they want to, and then at the same time play the roles that they want to play in this story. And that is just so exciting, because it's a thing that, you know, every time, you know, a person of color, I think, gets to do a show or a movie out here, that we always say amongst each other, which is like, white people get to do this all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like,
it's that thing of, you know, I think for audiences who aren't part of that community, getting to feel like they're in on a conversation that would generally not include them.
Right.
And I know for me, that's one of the things I love most in movies, is like, I feel like I'm eavesdropping on like, what do the, you know, the housewives, or the, you know, whatever, be it about ethnicity or whatever, just like, if they're not people that I'm going to encounter on a daily basis, and they're at the table and they're talking amongst themselves, and I get to know what it's about.
But I'll add too, and Parvesh brought this up, like, the concept of intersectionality is really interesting within this movie, because as much as it's like, sure, it's Joel and Bowen and Margaret Cho, that's their whole group isn't Asian. Do you know what I mean? You're getting a little bit of a range. You have like a Greek actor. You have, I'm not sure where Tomas Matan is from, but, you know, a Latino actor. And more than that, I was really loving how effeminate some of them were, mm-hmm. and that was just like a welcome range. And then also, it just was giving, like, if you're like, oh, gay men are like this, Fire yeah. Island was like, there's no gay men are like this. Like, gay men are like so many things. And so even within like the Bennett sisters,
yeah.
or, you know, the people they're running into, like, there's a range, there's differences. And then there's even small nods. Like, they do have the black actor that's in their group is the only one that's sort of bigger and maybe has the moves we all right. desire. Yeah, that was and want the one bear actors.
And if I have one caveat in this movie, it's like, I wish he'd gotten to be as sexualized as everybody else.
Sure.
So they have one comment they make about him where they're like, we know you're out in the weeds getting your ass eaten. And to me, I agree. I would have loved to see him straight hooking up. But I also was like, oh, is this a really nuanced way of saying like he's hooking up? But maybe it's more, it's hidden, like that there are these power structures and like they're still the thing of who, because the whole thing is about who is valued more, who's prized most, and them pushing back against that. And even within their group, like then, and there's really interesting interplay. Like, my favorite scene in it is when Bowen and Joel's characters like come to a head.
Yeah.
And Bowen like references Joel, who has this incredible built body, and he's like, I'm sorry, because we started in the same place and then you had to do all this, and like gestures at right. his physique. And it's such a, like, as a woman, I feel like women are always obsessed with bodies and body image and in an on-screen way that I don't think men always get to, in terms of having it affect them in very similar ways. Like, women are allowed to talk about having body issues in a way that men aren't. And so just having that, like, I felt there were so many moments like that that added so much texture and nuance, and are also, again, part of that personal perspective that you're having someone bring to the table.
Yeah. Well, also, I just wanted to ask just a general macro question. At the Max FunCon this weekend, you know, Alonzo, Dre, and I had this like really wonderful conversation. You said something that kind of stuck with me since you said it, Alonzo, which was, you know, with your first marriage, that you
all to
you
the said, same like, person, you, by the way.
Oh,
yeah, all to the same person. It's. You, but you were saying how you were like, oh, gay marriage isn't going to be around in my lifetime. Yeah. And for me, it's funny because like one of the first things I was able to vote on, you know, was Prop 8 was like, and I was like, hell yeah, I'm a fucking like, yeah. So that being said, what is it like for you to see a movie like this exist?
I mean, you know, it's on a continuum, obviously. I think we've been getting films like this. You know, when the new queer cinema happened in the early 90s, I think sort of the second wave became like the very gay rom-coms, you know?
Yeah.
And
Broken Hearts Club?
Yeah,
Billy's Hollywood Scream Kiss.
Yes. Oh, you know, that whole era of film, you know. But this one, I think, comes from, you know, it is like so gay in terms of like writer and director and like so many of the major creative forces, but also like the cast. You know, we have shout out to Matt Rogers, friend of the show. He and Bowen co-host the Las Culturistas podcast. He's part of the gang of friends. There's just a real queer sensibility here that I think, you know, is sort of the next phase of this. I mean, later this year we have Bros, where you know you have an entirely queer cast even playing the straight character. So like this is not a thing that just sort of happened out of the blue, but it's also, you know, it's a new and exciting development, and then it's the next step on the path to wherever it is we go after this. I was thinking about, you know, Drea talked at one point about what a big deal it was when that movie The Lover came out, because Tony Leung, Shang-Chi Tony Leung, the other Tony right. Leung from Hong Kong, was one of the rare moments in an American movie, or at least in a Western film, where you had a very sexualized Asian man. And frankly, in the decade since then, there haven't been a ton of them. It's getting, you know, there are improvements along the way, but this is a movie not just about like gay guys and their sort of sexual agency and like looking good in a Speedo, but it's like so many Asian guys in this movie who are objectified, and that's new and different for American movies.
Do you remember when Entertainment Weekly was really like dirty its first like few years and they had like a photo of Tony Leung's butt from The Lover?
Yes. Oh,
I had that.
Yes.
Yep.
I did too.
Yep, I had that.
Formative. And I mean, I've discussed this before, obviously.
Remember, like, EW went like, oh, we have to be like kid friendly in 2001 because we got rid of you Gen Yers and made this thing called the Millennials. Anyway, I wanted to share, I know we're on a podcast, but I wanted to share with my co-host, like, the first thing I wrote on my notes for this film was Broken Hearts Club. Because I loved, we just mentioned Billy's Hollywood Screen Kiss and Broken Hearts Club. I remember, like, I think I'd rent those two movies on, like, Hollywood Video and watch them over and over, masturbate sometimes. But mainly, it would be, like, because, like, it was just a group of friends, and Billy Porter is the only black person in Broken Hearts Club. Yeah. And it's just so funny, like, how so many of them are straight actors, you know, Dean Cain and everything. So it's just such a... where we've come since I was in high school and college to now with representation. And like you said, we don't need to explain everything anymore. You can just drop in, Google's a wonder. If you don't know a word, you look it up. I just want to share, I don't want to give away, but I wrote down mainly every kind of quippy line, every like throwaway.
So many good lines.
You know, like when people improvise, as an improviser, you know, when people improvise a little too much, when the director just like, oh, these stars are really powerful, so I'm going to just let them play, and they're just in constant agreement. Yeah, I like that. You like that? Yeah, I do. We're just in constant agreement to the end of this scene to go. But their shit, like, it's full of one-liners that we don't need to give away. But I think the Joel and Bowen are wonderful. You know that they're best friends. I couldn't help but think about all my gay best friends, and like, we should write a movie and do a movie like they did, their friends did. But Conrad Riccamora is not only just beautiful, but I have seen him on stage, and I loved him in How to Get Away with Murder, but he is fantastic. He brings a gravitas, and you know he can be funny. You know he can song and dance. Of course, when you watch, you know, whenever you see like a song and dance man have to like sing badly or dance badly, you're like, oh God, you know you can like do triple pirouettes around this whole thing. But he was great. He was great.
He does this little like shimmy moment on a stage that I was like,
one, two, three, and
I was like, how do I make a gif in my brain? No, and again, speaking to the Austin of it, a lot of what the adaptations of Pride and Prejudice is, in fact, get wrong is the Darcy. And he is a perfect Darcy because it is all about, Mr. Darcy. Oh, it's my sternness and my, you know, sort of it's seeming cold emotions are actually guarding just a tender heart. And he is so dreamy in that way, in such a I can't give enough credit to the adaptation, but yes, I'm glad Alonso brought up Andrew and how much we love Andrew Ahn as a director and a human, because this is the kind of thing, I know we love to not say something's elevated, but there are this movie is so much more beautiful than a rom-com generally is. There are so many choices. There's like an entire long scene that you're watching on a dock from like 50 feet away. Just like beautiful choices giving you.
Yeah, that sun being in between them. And then when they stand up and I was like, oh, I love it. That's it's a dreamy shot. And I will say, you know, I don't know. But when he's like, what do you want in that? And there's like the old couple, like that's my kind of cheese. I'm like, oh, that's my favorite flavor.
It's cheese, but it's also a movie that sets up from the very beginning how heteronormativity is kind of the enemy. And it does not end with these dudes being like, but you know what? What I really want is kind of my own version of heteronormativity. It is not. They're like, you know what I'm not into? Monogamy. Like, it's...
Oh, I cheered.
It's right. It's vocally cheered. It's still its own thing. It's not like fucking 50 Shades of Grey where they're like, oh, I'm so, I want to be, well, what I really want is a sensible marriage to a woman who respects me.
Poly gang, rise up. We are out here and it's not just cheating husbands. No. Please believe us when we put it on our dating profile.
Please, can you imagine the amount of marriages and just plot devices that would just be done in the world if we just like, oh, you cheated on me, or why do we reframe that? You had a physical experience with someone while I was 4,000 miles away for 5 weeks, and you're still taking care of the dog. We're fine.
Yeah.
We're fucking fine.
Oh, yeah. No, the way the world would shake when it's like, Lord, oh, I don't have ownership of your body, so I'm going to actualize you as a person and give you the freedom. And like, then maybe doing that even in a monogamous relationship.
I'd like to think that Fire Island takes place in a land and time when Roe v. Wade is forever.
Forever. Amen. Vote,
folks.
Alonzo, why don't we let you kick this one?
Oh, I'm a screen it, and luckily I did get to see it on a screen. They had there was a press screening at on the Disney lot that I was able to go to. Fine. And if you're in New York and you got to go to New Fest, they had a premiere there. But beyond that, you're kind of left to the devices of Hulu. But absolutely, my highest rating. I was terrified going into this because I wanted it to be good so badly, and thankfully it was. I was so relieved. It's a delight. It's charming, it's funny, it's smart, it's sexy, it's all the things that you would want it to be. And Andrew Ahn wins again, so like it's great.
I would also be a screen it. I would love to screen it. And I'll tell you, about 5 minutes into this movie, I was like, oh, I'm going to see this 1,000 times. Like, I love a rom-com. Yeah. And this one, there were more than one romantic moment where I was like, oh my God, like covering my hand and just grinning. There were sexy things. I laughed so hard. I will buy this on physical media, and I am praying for an hour of them playing celebrity with those guys trying to make him guess Marissa Tomei, because that was the funniest shit I've ever seen.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. Parve, how about you?
I definitely screen it. Like, it was wonderful. Like you, Alonso, like, please be good. Please be good. You know, just because, not to mention that they're friendly folks in it, and you just want it. You know, you never want it to be like, oh, they tried. No, they did it. They fully did it. I'm just going to say Cherry Jones, but the E's are threes.
Threes.
Stop it.
I can't.
I've thought of that numerous times since.
I can't. I had to share one line from the movie because it is filled with them, which are just these little, like, ice, you know, like, not, so a lot of those, and even among the supporting cast, the entire fleshed out group of friends are all good. There's not a false moment, and I couldn't help but think, like, shit, I feel old. because I remember like my drinking days are done. These kind of like weekends are done. And it just made me feel nostalgic and grateful that like, yeah, these spaces and places do exist. They're open for everyone. And I think, Drea, you said like, I could see this being like, oh, just put it on in the background at Pride. At a house party or a pool party at Fire Island or Palm Springs, this a Russian River, you know that this will just be on. You know, it feels like it's a one you can just leave on. Like, ah, here they're gonna say that joke about Cherry Jones with the East. Did you hear that? The East. Do you want another drink? Oh, okay. Well, how about some poppers? Let's just go to my room.
Iffy, oh, what about you?
Oh, you know, it's a clear screen for me. Beautiful movie, had a fun time, cute, everything you kind of want from it. It's a good old time. It's a gay old time.
Yes.
I don't know how I was going to let that squeeze by me. Yeah. All right, y'all. We're going to take a break. We'll come back after we hear from some of these shows for maximum fun.
Are you okay?
Hi, I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin.
And the three of us host The Flophouse. It's a podcast where we watch a new bad movie and then we talk about it.
Dan, you say it's hosted by the three of us. We've had a lot of great guest co-hosts like Gillian Flynn, Jamel Bowie, John Hodgman, Jessica Williams, Wyatt Cenac, Joe Bob Briggs, Josh Gondelman, Roman Mars.
Yeah, and you said new movies, but what about the time we did Meatballs 2?
Okay. Yeah, sometimes we do older movies and sometimes we have guests, but mostly it's about us talking about like recent bad movies.
And don't forget about the ones where I made you do a role-playing game where you played cartoon dogs.
All right, yeah.
Shouldn't a promo be a really simple explanation about what our show's about? So what's the show about, Dan?
What's it about?
What's it about?
It's about friendship, all right? It's about our friendship and how we love each other.
The Flophouse. It's a podcast mostly about bad movies on Maximum Fun.
Do you sometimes wonder whatever happened to the kids at your school who really loved Star Trek?
You might remember a kid like me, the one who read the Star Trek novels and built starship models. I also took music classes to avoid taking gym classes that required showering after, but I don't see what that really has to do with—
Or a kid like me. I introduced myself to kids at my summer camp one year as Wesley. But when the school year started and some of those kids were in my new class, I actually had to explain to my friends that I had tried to take on the identity of my favorite Star Trek character. The shame haunts me to this day.
I'm sure some of those Star Trek fans from your childhood grew up to have interesting and productive lives, but we ended up being podcasters.
On The Greatest Discovery, you'll hear what happens to two lifelong Star Trek fans who didn't grow up to be great people, but just grew up to be people who love jokes as much as they love Trek.
So listen to our new episodes every week on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everyone, and welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm Yosef Iwadiway. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duralde,
Parvesh Chhina,
Drea Clark.
And look, we told you that Fire Island was an adaptation of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. So today we're asking, what modern retelling of a literature classic on film deserves a spot in the Hall of Excellence? Remember, this is for posterity, so you defend your pick and we'll leave it to the listeners to vote on a winner.
No writing them in this time. Let's make that clear. Last time we did a Hall of Excellence, we got usurped by a write-in.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still smart.
But you know, shout out to y'all. Y'all got us on that one.
Yes.
And we refuse to let it happen again.
Never.
Just like when the Saints won the Super Bowl and then they changed all the rules in the NFL the next season and we haven't been able to get close since, huh?
Just like that. Thanks. Alonzo and I were just talking about that Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah. It still stings.
Oh, those Saints. Okay, so obviously I love adaptations to film and I really like in like the kind of movies like Fire Island, like what we're talking about here, not just an adaptation, but like a modern retelling, a setting it up. And I feel like there's one that's to me the gold standard. And if I don't say like, what are we even doing here? So you guys, I have to, of course, shout out to another Austen adaptation, Clueless. To me, that's it. It's Cher is Emma. Like, you get such a great corollary between, again, Regent Sierra England, and then they put it again in another kind of time and space, which is Beverly Hills High School, and make it like comedic, but it still takes advantage of all of those structures and all of the classism and everything that filters into all of Austin. It's immensely quotable. It has incredible fashion. It has Rollin' with the Homies. It has a Brittany Murphy, like, Way Harsh Tie. It's quoted in Fire Island.
Yes.
Like,
yes,
it's truly, it's, I mean, it's Clueless. I would have played another film and then stayed up late tonight being like, I should have just, so I did it. Clueless, you guys. That's my Hall of Excellence choice. And yeah.
I mean, the queer film scholar in me wants to say, oh, well, you know, My Own Private Idaho is such a great updating of the Henry IV Falstaff stories. But no, I'm not doing that. I'm going to go with the 2021 West Side Story as an updating of Romeo and Juliet. And in a lot of ways, I think certainly in the script by Tony Kushner, some market improvements over some of the areas of the Arthur Lawrence original. But I think, again, you have to figure out how do you take these societal structures of yore and make them apply to, you know, the 20th, 21st century that we recognize. And so, you know, rather than having these sort of feuding great families, these duchies or whatever, you know, you have street gangs, but it's the intent is the same. The rivalry is the same. And you know, the tragedy is the same. So yeah, I think, you know, there was a joke on Mystery Science Theater one time about how, like, they were staging an all furniture Hamlet. Like, there are a lot of updates and you know, spins on Shakespeare that are just kind of showy and stupid and don't really mean anything. But I think that for its other flaws in terms of, you know, representation of you know, particular communities, nonetheless, I think West Side Story nails the outline of Romeo and Juliet pretty effectively.
Solid. Star-crossed lovers all up in there.
Yeah, see. Yeah. I you know, I was almost going to go with the R&J, but I was going to go with Baz Luhrmann's, you know, because, you know.
But that's a direct adaptation.
Yeah. Yeah. The text is there. It's just the visuals. Yeah,
but it looks cool. When you look at it,
it does look cooler.
Don't forget the two guns that Leguizamo pulled out.
But how could we?
I'm going to talk about, that movie, you know, seeing the modern take on Othello and the basketball school, it taught me how jealous white men could be of black excellence. This was like, you know, the beginning of Julia Stiles' Jungle Fever run, because she was doing Save the Last Dance after that. She was like the quintessential white woman for black men after this joint. So yeah, no, I was all about O was my shit. Way I fuck with this movie way too hard.
Obviously, I want to do my quote. He's no Mekhi Phifer, which every time we discuss a Mekhi Phifer movie, I will try and wrap those four words. So I just did it.
Yeah.
I love Parvesh's face right now.
What was the question? I thought you guys were talking about something else.
What is your favorite modern retelling of a classic story? So like Fire Island is to Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, boo.
Why?
That's amazing.
Because they said it was in the credits, it says it's based on the Odyssey, but then later they were like, it's not really based on the Odyssey. We just put that there to be a joke.
But it kind of fits. It has the sirens. It has.
Yeah. Okay, all right. I'll allow it. I just thought the Coens were just pulling our legs with that one.
But it's so wonderfully, like,
it's a great movie. I'm not,
you know, like, not, it's not so. It's that very, it has like that Big Fish vibe of just like magical realism. Mm. And I like that genre. But I honestly thought we were talking about something else. I thought we were talking about things we wanted to adapt. So I've just been like, I just got my. Did you know that can I just go there? The Velveteen Rabbit is 100 years old. It came out in 1922 by Marjorie Williams. I think so, but it's also just, I heard an NPR article and I bought the latest updated version.
Edition.
Yeah, and it just makes you weep. And it doesn't, and because I remember reading that book, and I maybe because I'm back in Illinois for the night, but like first grade teacher, Mrs. Sustek at Longwood Elementary School, and it was just like, why is there no quintessential Velveteen Rabbit that Disney had made in like the 40s or something? Like,
yeah.
Why don't we have, we don't have one. There isn't one. And it's going to be amazing when whoever, if it's a stop motion, if Wes Anderson or Tim Burton wants to try their hand on it, but whoever does it at Pixar, it's going to be insane. I can't think of, like, if I, a grown man of almost 43, wept when I got this book, and now I'm thinking about like giving it to my mom, but I kind of want to just get another one. I want to keep mine. But,
well, it would be awesome if somebody turned it into like a nice 25-minute, you know, TV special or something. Because so many kids' books, when you turn them into a 90-minute movie, get so sort of stretched out of shape, like the Polar Express and, you know, a lot of the Grinch.
It has a Disney Plus short vibe.
Yes, perfect. That would be perfect.
But I'm so sorry. I wasn't paying attention because then I was trying to rack.
No, I love that you weren't paying attention.
Perfect answer, though.
And you had like a smarter answer than all of us. Sorry, everybody. Yeah, like,
I mean, you can always go to What a Girl Wants with Amanda Bynes.
I believe you mean She's the Man.
She's the Man. Is that the
12th Night?
That's
the 12th Night one. Yeah. She's on, the Man was on my short list. She's the Man. Fantastic film.
I miss Amanda Bynes. Absolutely. She went out on top on Hairspray.
Bless. But She's the Man's a great adaptation of, or updating of 12th Night.
Colin Firth in it?
No, is that What a Girl Wants.
That is What a Girl Wants. Okay.
Yeah.
I was just saying, because like if a Darcy showed up in another adaptation, that's kind of fun.
I know.
You get extra points. Yeah.
I know. I should have, or another one would have been that's good as the half of it. You know, Cyrano de Bergerac.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Honorable mention to Easy A,
Scarlet Letter, which
is fantastic. And
Burt Royal.
I love
Burt
Emma.
Royal.
Emma Stone is great in it, right? But Stanley Tucci and Patricia Clarkson play like this married couple that I would watch. I want that married couple to be the one that the guys in Fire Island are trying to guess the celebrity with. That's what I would like. I'd like to watch that movie. So then I guess people get to vote on those online. Yes. We'll see which of us made it.
Yeah, let's see. You know, let us know. You know which one's the right one? Mine. Now it's time for staff picks. It can be any movie at all. So, Drea, why don't you start?
All right. So I have a pick that is currently out and was... this is going to shock you guys. It was at the 2022 Sundance Film Festival.
Really?
Yes, I know. Big twist for me. It's called Watcher by director Chloe Okuna. It stars Micah Monroe, whom a lot of people maybe know from It Follows. But it's a kind of psychological thriller. It takes place in Bucharest. She's this American woman who has moved there to be with her husband. And... she is convinced that there is someone creeping on her who's like following her or showing up. So a lot of it is like the horror threat of, is she being followed or not? And then a lot of it is, oh, isn't it fun when women aren't believed and, are proved right. And so, but it's really beautifully shot, really artful, really twisty. I really dug it. I think it's great. And I think that the director is one to watch. So Watcher, it's currently out and I think it will be released digitally very quickly as well.
Well, first, before I get to my movie, I just wanted to do a quick suck up to our guest and mention that if you guys didn't watch Connecting, it is available for purchase on Apple and Amazon. And it is, I think, going to be looked back as one of the quintessential pieces of COVID-19 pop culture. And it's a great show, and it's like every episode was degree of difficulty 10, and I miss it, and I wish it were still on, although I'm glad that it's the circumstances by which it existed are no longer quite in place, so that's a fair trade. My movie this week, though, is, if you know me at all, you know that there's nothing I love more than sports and Adam Sandler, but I am shocked to tell you that I loved Hustle, which is Adam Sandler's new movie about sports, and it's on Netflix. Netflix, directed by Jeremiah Zager, who did We the Animals a couple of years ago. It stars Sandler as a former basketball player who's now a struggling scout for the Philadelphia 76ers. He is traveling around trying to find, you know, the new next exciting basketball players. And on a trip to Spain, he goes to like a street ball game where he sees this incredible athlete played by Juancho Hernan Gomez, who plays for the Utah Jazz, and brings him back to Philadelphia and tries to turn him into a pro. This movie is not reinventing the sports movie in any way, but you have not seen training montages this good or this moving in a very long time. I was completely enraptured by this. I almost cried about four times, and I don't even know why. Like, again, there were like a million NBA players like doing cameos in this movie. I know none of them except Dr. J, but I love this movie. So really, if this sounds like something you would not in a million years want to watch, check out Hustle, because I was really delighted by it.
Nice. Parvay, yeah. you got a staff pick?
Yeah, I actually do. It's so funny because I feel like I don't watch a lot of movies that much. Really, I feel like I'm a TV guy, and it's hard to commit to 2.5 hours. But, you know, the under hour, it's so wonderful, and then you watch 5 hours. But I did want to bring up the Bibi Zahara Benet documentary making its streaming video demand on Apple TV Plus. Bibi Zahara Benet was the first winner of Drag Race, and it was a great documentary about her. I had seen it earlier this year, and now it's, you know, you can stream it, and that is a fun one. It's Pride Month as well, so I mean, it just kind of going with our theme of,
yeah, and support some pride,
yeah, and especially a black queen, you know, too, as well. So it's just nice that there's that run of, we talked about black excellence earlier, I think, but there's this moment of like on Drag Race where it's just like there was that run of the black drag queens winning, and we'll see what's going to happen with. Are you watching All-Stars?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, just
joking. Jinx.
I mean, but then there are moments where Shea Coulee is just like, just give it to her sometimes, like the professional.
Fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Me, I'm just going to keep it simple and roll with my pick to make y'all understand why I'm right and say, oh, make sure you watch Mekhi Phifer. Sit down, buckle up.
Campaigning.
Yeah. And your extra credit is watching Save the Last Dance after it. To really just get into the mood.
If you just admit you're obsessed with Josh Hartnett.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Who wasn't?
The
hottie of our time.
Fair. The faculty. Come on.
Halloween water.
Yes. Before we sign off, we've got a quick 5-star review for you. This one comes from Crow455 and is titled Love This Pod. And they say, I don't have time to watch a lot of movies, but I do have time to listen to this podcast. So this is how I decide which movies I need to see. Absolutely loved Paddington 2.
Thematic.
Oh, love it. Look, and now it's your turn. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast or wherever you listen, and maybe you'll hear it read on a future episode. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing the love.
Thanks, Crow.
Woo!
Yay.
Parvesh, thank you so much for being on the show. Is there anything you'd like to plug before you get a bone out of here?
No, friends. Thanks for having me. Oh, yeah. I think we'll be filming some Shining Veil later this year. Ooh, we got picked up for season 2 on Stars with a Z.
Hell yes.
Hey, it's work. Come on, guys. It's all about, yeah, we're just trying to pay rent now, right?
Look, that's
in my 20s anymore. The idealism is gone.
I'm a non-cord cutter. I still get Stars with a Z.
Okay.
They made us push the app. Hey, guys, get the app. $4.99 a month. Stars with a Z.
Not Lisa with an S.
Get the app. Get the app. Drea and Alonzo, thank you so much for being on the show. And you, listener, if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Maximum_Film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/Maximum Film. And that's also where you can vote for the Hall of Excellence pick, or send us an email at MaximumFilm@MaximumFun.org. Our producer, who is super, is Marissa Flaxbart. Our senior producer, who is senior, is Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun. We'll be right back.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.